Welcome to the Practically Perfect Parenting Podcast. My name is John Summers Flanagan. The title of today's show is Dear Mom and Dad, Please Be My Parent and Not My Bestie.
And I'm Sarah Polinchek, the co-host of this show, and I am not my child's bestie.
Well, so we're doing true confessions today also.
Starting out, yeah.
So today's sponsor, as always, is the Charles Engelhard Foundation. So thank you to them. And thanks also to the National Parenting Education Network, NPEN. You can find them at npen.org.
All right. So Dear Mom and Dad, Please Be My Parent and Not My Bestie. John, how did you get this title?
Well, it was from my sort of creative lockbox inside my head. It just came out. It's because I'm the kind of person who is, I tend to be flexible and liberal. I like nonviolent parenting. You know a lot of those things about me. Mm-hmm. But recently, and I don't know if it is a recent phenomenon. I've just seen way too many parents who just can't seem to summon up, and I'm going to use a word here that I feel a little awkward or uncomfortable using, but they can't seem to summon up the guts to actually step up and be parents. I feel bad saying it so strongly, but it worries me. It's like, dude, be a parent.
Mm-hmm. It does seem like it's becoming a new phenomenon, doesn't it?
I feel like it is.
Yeah.
I want you to be my buddy. Mm-hmm. Well, I think fathers and sons and daughters, mothers and daughters and sons, what a beautiful thing when they have a good relationship, when they can go and do things and enjoy each other, maybe enjoy each other more than they enjoy anybody else on the planet.
Right.
That's fabulous. But if your intention is that, you know, if that's your focus and your goal, just to be the bestie, then I think you lose out a lot of things. I mean, for example, I mean, who decides if you're a bestie with somebody, who decides bedtime?
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Because being a bestie sort of implies this equal relationship,
right? It does. Yeah. Who decides how much internet time and television time and phone time? Who decides what you're going to eat and whether you're going to have any vegetables?
Geez, I would not want my 13-year-old deciding those things for me.
Yeah. You know, you can leave those decisions to 13-year-olds. And occasionally 13-year-olds will surprise us. And they'll step up and make some really good, healthy decisions. But generally speaking, that's why you're the adult. That's why you're the parent. You will make, generally speaking, better decisions about what to have for dinner than your 13-year-old. Now, Sarah, I used to do a lot of work at Families First parenting programs with divorced, divorcing, separated, never married parents. And so one of my jobs was to do an all-day divorce class, and I would hear some amazing things. So, for example, some of the things that stand out in my mind, a mom who would talk far too much about how she was hurt in her marriage by the dad, and she would talk to her 13-year-old daughter about that. And as much as it's important to have reasonably open relationships with our children, it feels like using your child as a counselor is a little bit more of breaking down of boundaries and using them as a friend instead of a child or having them be the child. And I remember a dad who would talk far, far too much about, well, I have to pay this child support. We would be able to do many more fun things, children, if only your mother was not forcing me to pay this child support. Mm. Again, that's just too much disclosure. And he would sometimes show the kids the checkbook. And that's, again, you know, the adult is the one who needs to handle the finances. When kids start to look over the books, they feel too much responsibility. You're really stealing some of their childhood.
Yeah, and what I heard you saying too was that the parents were really getting their needs met by a kid, right?
Yep.
And I just really question what that's like for a kid who's developing and really a teenager by definition is already confused about their own self, right?
Yeah,
and if they're feeling like their parent needs them, where's the guidance? I mean, where's the, right?
Well, the normal And I you know, again, I'm not big into hierarchical relationships, mm-hmm. but the normal hierarchical roles in a parent-child relationship, if they break down, then odd things begin to happen. Mm-hmm. And part of it is stealing your child's childhood. Mm-hmm. I remember a 10-year-old who did all the grocery shopping. Mm-hmm. He would ride the bus to the grocery store and do all the grocery shopping because he was in the position of adult.
Right.
And he was really doing more parenting of his mother than she was of him.
Yeah, so really missing out on some important milestones that he needed to serve the mom's needs. That kind of reminds me of, I don't know, you know, some things that happened when I was a teenager. I had a good friend whose parents wanted to include us a lot in the partying. Mm. And so we partied together. It sounds weird to even say that.
With the parents?
Yeah. Mm. And I remember at the time feeling like it was kind of exciting, you know, to sort of have this permission in a way from an adult to do something we weren't really supposed to be doing and was illegal. But mostly it gave me kind of a funny feeling in my stomach. Mm-hmm. And I know that it gave that same feeling to my friend too. And she felt like this obligation because and now as an adult, I see that those parents wanted us
right.
for their social entertainment. And that's kind of,
And your gut or your tummy was telling you that, mm-hmm. that this is something not quite right about this relationship.
Yeah.
It's almost nothing that makes me more angry when I'm doing some counseling. And I counsel a fair number of teenagers. And when they'll say things like, well, yeah, you know, my mom got me into smoking pot. It's like, oh, no, mm-hmm, no,
right.
That's just not, you know, I'm not particularly rigid. If the mom wants to smoke pot, gosh, you know, find a time and a place to do it with your friends, but maybe not with your 14-year-old son.
Right. So what do you think it is? What makes parents want to be besties with their kids?
Well, here's something from the internet. This is mm-hmm. just a quote, and I'm just going to read it.
All right.
Here's a mom saying, I chose to be my daughter's friend because I wanted our short time together to be pleasant. I was a single mom, and I didn't want my relationship with her to be filled with nothing but rules and fighting. Wow, she captures a lot.
Yeah, you know, when I hear that, I feel compassion for that mom. I kind of get it. I mm-hmm. see what she was wanting there and why if she only has a couple hours a day to be with her, you know, her daughter, that she just felt like, oh, let's just make this all fun and good.
Mm-hmm.
So I get why she was motivated in
sure.
that way. But what do you think that meant for the daughter?
Well, yeah, I mean, I'm struck by what does it mean for the daughter? She just probably didn't have the limits mm-hmm. and the rules that she needed to have. I mean, because if the mom is saying, I didn't want my relationship with her to be filled with nothing but rules and fighting, mm-hmm. that would suggest that she was backing off and maybe not establishing rules because she didn't want to fight. And that is what I think one of the core problems is. Many parents are afraid to set limits because they don't want their child to throw a temper tantrum. Mm-hmm. Which it can be emotionally painful. Mm-hmm. It can be embarrassing. It can be a number of things.
Yeah.
It can just be hard.
Yeah.
And so you want to avoid that. But my sense is that there's no way to avoid that without some negative outcomes. And so we're better off enforcing the limits with compassion, with empathy, and dealing with a little bit of fighting,
mm-hmm.
but also making sure that you schedule some good times. So,
right. Yeah. It's almost like people approach it like it's an either or thing,
yes.
right?
Right.
And it's just not the case. We can be kind and firm parents setting those limits, and we can also have a lot of fun.
Yep. Yep.
Right?
It's a lot about
so
balance.
So just because maybe we're saying don't be besties with your kid doesn't mean we're not saying don't have fun and have a good relationship with your kid. We're saying we can have it all, right?
Well, I think what we're saying is that you got to do some of both.
Yeah.
You got to work hard to have a good relationship. But at the same time, you got to work hard to step up, be a parent, set limits, mm-hmm. have consequences. Be the mature one mm-hmm. who makes the adult decisions
right.
in the relationship.
Right.
So let me ask you, what are some ways that parents can establish a healthy, loving, and respectful relationship with their children?
Oh, there's so many ways. I just think really bringing joy into the home is mm-hmm. a good thing to do. I mean, I don't know, to make that a little bit more specific, finding out what your kids like to do is such a respectful thing to do. I think it does so much when we really tune in to what it is that interests our kid. We learn about them. We show them that what they're doing matters. We kind of give them a place of priority in the house. We make them feel like they belong in our house and that they're important.
Right, yeah.
You know, all of those things. I mean, that's just setting a nice foundation. And when that foundation is strong, when a kid feels like, okay, I belong here, I'm loved, these people care about me, I'm protected, I'm safe, all of those core things, mm-hmm. then when the kid says, hey, I want to just, I don't know, I want to stay home alone for 4 hours tonight. You guys go leave me alone. And you say, no, that's not okay. You need to come with us to the boring thing. Mm-hmm. Perhaps, you know, there's a little bit of a struggle, but that kid is learning and getting a message that I'm safe and taken care of.
Yeah. And you got a little leverage because mm-hmm. I heard the first part of what you said is all about show interest in what your child is genuinely interested mm-hmm. in. And I think a lot of times parents can sort of co-opt the child's interests and say, well, I'm interested in hockey, mm-hmm. so you should be interested in hockey.
Right.
Right? But if the child is interested in dance, to be interested in dance with your child, even if you hate dance. Mm-hmm. I have to confess, I'm saying lots of terrible things today. I don't like soccer very well.
Yeah.
Both my daughters loved soccer, played mm-hmm. a lot of soccer. Sorry. I had to watch a lot of soccer.
Yeah.
And you know, I watched the soccer because I loved my children.
Right.
And that's what they were interested in. I know some parents who struggle because the kids are interested in computer games, right? Mm-hmm. Well, I think you got to set limits on the computer games, but you should intermittently show some interest and compassion and connection with your child around computer games, mm-hmm. even if it's not your favorite thing in the world.
I remember when my oldest went through his Thomas the Train phase, I just couldn't do it. I literally couldn't do it. And thank goodness my husband he did 3 hours a day of Thomas the Train. And sometimes when I get a little frustrated with my husband, I think, oh, you saved me during the Thomas the Train phase. So, okay, that's good.
That's one of the advantages of having two parents in the
kidding.
House.
True.
Hand something off.
Yep, yep.
So, you know, I want to just share a story. Years ago, I was doing some counseling with a 15-year-old boy, and he and his dad were not talking. They quit talking completely. Mm-hmm. And the dad had super high standards for him. I ended up with a chance to go to a meeting at the school, child study team or something like that, where I got invited. I went. There were probably 10 of us sitting around a table talking about this 15-year-old, and he's there too, and the mom's there, and the dad's there. I'd never met him, but the boy was coming to counseling to see me, so I intentionally sat next to the dad, and I'm thinking, yeah, I'm going to bond. It turned out we're a little different.
He's going to be thinking, look at this cool counselor I'm friends with
yeah,
now, right?
That's right. That's what I was thinking. Yeah, I wanted to be besties.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm sitting there, and at some point, I decided to ask the 15-year-old, so what we call projective questions in counseling. And I said, so what if you got an A on a test? Because he was doing very badly in school. What if you got an A? Who would you show that to first? And he said, I'd show my dad, I'd show my mom, and I'd show my special ed teacher. And I turned to the dad. I'm sitting right next to him. I said, hey, so I want to say, it sounds to me like your son still really values you and you're important to him. I want to invite you to come to counseling. And he just sort of explodes. He pushed me in the meeting, and not hard, but he just sort of pushed me in the shoulder, and he just started to rant for about 2 minutes. And he said, he complained about the kid being taught French instead of English when he didn't know how to read and blah, blah, blah. I mean, he was going back in time and just really
he triggered something.
Mm-hmm. And then he turned to me at the very end and said, I'll come to counseling. You know, I've been to counseling before. I'll come again. I remember thinking, oh, no, can I take that back? Can I say, please?
You're uninvited.
You're uninvited. Never mind. I misspoke. But he came. Mm-hmm. And they wouldn't meet together. I mean, I had to meet with him separately. And I remember the boy was very difficult. I met with the dad. And he really had high standards. I mean, he expected his son to do a lot of work. He expected his son to be pretty accomplished in school. You know, he wanted straight A's. He was getting straight F's. So they weren't even close. Mm-hmm. And I remember saying to the dad, well, look, you know, I would just like to suggest three things for you to try. Just three things. And he said, He said to me, I remember he said, "That dog don't hunt." Which, the subtitles kind of said, well, what I'm trying doesn't work, and so I'm open to trying your three ideas, which I thought was pretty cool. Mm-hmm. So I said, okay, number one, you love your son? He says, yeah, I love my son. I said, tell him that every day. Look at him and say, I love you every day. And he said, well, I usually leave that to the wife, but I'll give it a shot. I said, cool. Number two was every day I want you to touch your son in some kind of loving and gentle way. And he kind of looks up at me and says, you mean like hug him?
So aghast.
Yes.
Suggestion.
Well, I said, yeah, that'd be great. That's a great example. He said, well, usually I'd leave that to the wife too, but I'll give that a try. I said, all right, cool. And then I said, number three, do something once a week for fun with your son. But it's got to be something he wants to do, mm-hmm. something he enjoys, and not just something you want him to enjoy. He said, no problem. We both like to go four-wheeling. We'll go four-wheeling. We'll have a good time. I said, great. So he left, and it turned out he was way easier to work with than I thought he was going to be. Mm-hmm. The next day, I get a call from the mom. And the mom says, I don't know what you did, but they're talking again. And then she says, and this morning, I was outside of the kitchen, and they had had breakfast together, and I thought I heard them hug.
I don't know what a hug sounds like.
You know, I thought this is a mom who's listening pretty closely. Mm-hmm. And then she said, and then I saw my son walking out the driveway on his way to school, and there were tears just streaming down his face. Mm-hmm. And for me, it was a great lesson in sometimes parents just need to know a few basic things to do. Mm-hmm. And some kids just really need to be reconnected with one or both parents or caretakers or important people in their lives. And this dad was way more cooperative than I had ever imagined that he would be. And so I know we're talking about besties, mm-hmm. but here's a dad who had pulled back and didn't have much of a relationship with his kids. And so I would say to whoever's listening, you might be too close and you might need to take a step back and establish boundaries and be the adult and be the parent. Or you might need to take a step closer and to work on a closer relationship, a respectful relationship, a fun relationship, mm-hmm. but one where you still continue to have standards and expectations and teach values. This dad, I remember one of the things I said to him is, you can keep your high standards, but just add these three things. And the goal was to get him a little more connected and a little closer to his son.
So it sounds like you're talking a lot about having the close relationship, but making sure it stays parent-child relationship and not egalitarian, right?
Right.
And I guess one of the things I wonder about as you're talking is, how do we know when we've crossed that line?
Hmm. I think you've got a money tip about that.
Mm-hmm. I think that I do.
But before you get to it, Sarah, I am going to just read a quote from a mom. Why don't you read the quote from the mom? Because I've been talking too much.
Okay, so this is a mom that says, refusing to be friends with my teenagers doesn't mean they don't enjoy my company or confide in me, but it does mean that the boundaries between us are always clear. I am confident that being a parent to them right now will lay a firm foundation, one that will allow our relationship to grow into a true friendship when they are adults. I think that's what we're talking about, right?
I love the last part of that. Yeah. Grow into a true friendship when they are adults.
Right.
It's not a true friendship when they're children, and we need to still be the adult mm-hmm. and have the rules and the expectations.
Yeah. So the big tip now?
Yeah, let's do the money tips. Yeah.
Okay. So I think mine is that everybody needs a strong support system so that we're relying on other adults. This, again, I'm going to say this again, but this parenting is hard stuff. And we need to have other people that we trust so that we can say, hey, I've talked to my kid about this. What do you think about that? Or do you think it's okay to watch an R-rated movie with my 10-year-old? I don't know. Mm-hmm. I mean, checking in with other people that you trust, I think, is so important.
I'm going to answer that one. No, it's not okay.
All right. Thanks. Yeah, I check in with you. But having that support system is critical for everybody. And then I think I would emphasize that for single parents, it's even more important. If you can be a part of a support group for single parents, or have other parents that you, again, that you trust, or if there's someone in your kid's school that you trust that you could talk to, it might be a good time, too, to seek out counseling for yourself if necessary, so that you can bounce some of these things off and make sure that you're getting your emotional needs met in a healthy way and not relying on your kid.
I can't believe you stole mine.
Oh, oops.
You stole my you stole my money tip.
I did.
Well, because mine was going to be just get your needs met.
Oh, right.
Outside of the parenting relationship and role. And so thank you, Sarah, for... Now, yours was worth $100. Mine was worth about 50 cents because
right.
I just repeated it. So, you know... The whole concept of when can you be besties, mm-hmm. And the adult friendships. Mm-hmm. I can't help it. I think of my father a little bit because he's 89. And I would say for the last 10, 20 years, 30 years, even before that, there probably was nobody I would rather go golfing with than my dad. There's probably nobody I'd rather, I mean, he's kind of hooked on sports, but there's nobody I wouldn't even spend time watching a whole game of some kind of sporting event unless it's with my dad, mm-hmm. in which case we'll have a great time.
Yeah.
But boy, he was a parent, you know, mm-hmm. he was a parent and he taught me to respect him, never hit me,
yeah.
right? But he taught me to respect him a lot because of the role model that he was in my life, because he showed me how to be honest, how to be a trustworthy and reliable person, how to be kind. Mm-hmm. He was a very kind man, and how to be very hardworking. And so all those values stuck with me because he was my father and I looked up to him. I didn't look over to him. And I right. just think that's an important distinction.
Do you remember looking back at like what age you were when that started to shift? When you, you know, you could start to feel like the power in your relationship was more equal and that you looked at him more as an equal friend and not as someone that you needed?
I played lots of sports and he coached some. Mm-hmm. And I remember during my teen years being quite resistant to his feedback and input.
Mm-hmm. That's... Teenager.
How shocking.
Wow. Yes, I am appalled.
I do remember as a preteen, you know, getting up every morning and wanting to hear from him his bowling score or whatever it was that he was doing.
Mm-hmm.
So I had that connection, but then I was very resistant to his input as a teenager. And so I would say, and really didn't value a lot of our time together,
mm-hmm.
You know, was less pleasant. I would say mid-20s,
yeah.
Late 20s, it was like, wow, something transformed.
He became wiser, right?
he became so much smarter,
yeah.
and a much more valuable person in my life.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, I think yeah. that's about when it happened.
Yeah, that's nice.
All okay. right. Well, we have covered just about everything you can, and obviously we're saying fairly strongly, don't be the bestie.
Mm-hmm.
I want to just put a caveat on that. You know, positive relationships are super important.
Mm-hmm.
I just hope no one gets the idea that we're against kind, loving, great relationships between parents and kids. We just want to add that parenting piece in there.
Yeah. And we have some resources again,
yes, we
right?
do.
So I like this book. It's called The Collapse of Parenting, How We Hurt Our Kids When We Treat Them Like Grownups. Okay,
nice.
That's by Leonard Sachs.
All right. S-A-X.
Mm-hmm. Got to clarify that. Good.
Yeah, I just thought S-A-C-K-S, and I thought you said Leonard Sex.
Right,
and then
right,
I thought,
right.
Okay. Okay. I'm just going to repeat some things I've said before. The npen.org website has resources.
Mm-hmm.
There are also dialogues and conversations on there that people can tune into. You could actually initiate one. There's an NPEN Facebook page, and you could post a question on there, get some answers. Maybe start a discussion about besties and
mm-hmm.
stuff like that.
Nice.
And then, of course, you know, I've got my blog or / website, johnsummersflanagan.com, and you can look forward to some things posted there about a variety of topics.
Very nice. Okay. It's been nice chatting with you, John.
So, Sarah, thanks for being my bestie today.
Today, in this moment.
In this moment. All right. Everybody, thanks to the Charles Engelhard Foundation, to NPEN, to Sarah Polinchek. And I am just pleased and honored to be able to spend a little podcasting time with everybody.
Thank you.